Hello. Hello. I panicked. I turned the music on. Welcome back to Podcastville, as some like to call it, man. I'm back. Oh, man. We back up in the house. Y'all hear that shit reverberate right through the arm right there? This is goddamn $16 podcast arm right here off Amazon. And I got this cup that I found at a Mexican joint, and took it home with me. I use the cheapest kind of dish detergent. I just don't like splurging on dish detergent. And it puts these like white stains on my cups and cutlery. And it makes it look dirty, but I wash it every week. It's bullshit. You guys don't believe my ass, do you? Yeah, just like, you know, it's this cheap fucking dishwasher detergent. And, you know, a clear cup like this, you know, it just kind of like white stains it. You can't really see it, but it pisses me off. You know, I have a girl over or whatever, and I'll be like, "You want something to drink?" She'll be like, "Yeah." And I bring her a cup, and all these women, they go, "It looks dirty." And I'm like, "Bitch, it ain't fucking dirty." I get frustrated. You know, I don't know. I get frustrated about it. So we got, what else? What else is going on, man? What else? Ain't locked myself out of social media enough lately. Wasting a little too much time. It's kind of getting on my nerves. But you know, you go on someone's show or something, and it's really cool. You go on a show with, you know, someone cool, and you want to reshare it, and then all of a sudden your brain goes like, "Ooh, I wonder who's looking at my story. Let's compulsively check it." You know, every 10 minutes, and it gets to just be not good. You know, it gets to a point where it's like you're pacing the kitchen and you keep looking for something to eat in the fridge that's not going to pop up. You know what I mean? So I've been thinking about that. I got me an assault bike. And it's an aerodyne bike, so you just bang, bang, bang. You know, 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes have made my recoveries absolutely stellar, boys and girls, the last couple of days. My whoop band, you know, it's coming back at a 98, 96 the last 3 days. You got that Mamdani guy elected in New York, a socialist, they say. Free something about free transit or whatever. I don't know where I was going with that. I'm neutral on it. I don't really think it's helpful to give a fuck about politics, but it is, it's funny. People make it their whole personality. I feel like people that follow politics in this day and age compulsively, I mean, like folks, you know, those folks that no matter where the conversation goes, sometimes I do that shit, just out of irony, though. Make something political, make something about liberals or gays or Israel, you know. It's kind of fun to do as satire. But if you genuinely only want to talk about politics, you got to ask yourself, do I have enough going on? Am I doing enough in my life? Because I'm just constantly following politics and things I can't control. I don't know. You know, white women are getting a lot of heat on Twitter today. White women. Because, like, a huge portion of them voted for this Mom Donnie guy. And there's a lot of gay people that are also voting for this guy. I'm just, you know, I was scrolling Twitter this morning, and it was just kind of funny to, like, I like taking a look. I like indulging a little bit, splurging a little bit, and just kind of seeing what's going on with the discourse. And there's a lot of talking points about gays and Muslims and subway stabbings and all these sort of things. So that's literally all I know about this. I guess being the mayor of New York is a big deal. You know, it's a big deal. But does it affect me? No, it doesn't affect me. But I don't know, man. Thought we'd just talk about life for a second on a Wednesday. Hopefully people aren't popping in here being like, where's the football talk? Where's the football talk? You know, what the hell, dupe? The fuck? You know, something like that. I do have some football stuff. We'll talk about college football playoff a little bit. First rankings came out. Sauce Gardner obviously touched on it yesterday. We had an early show yesterday, and it was a very short show, like 20 minutes, so not a lot of people caught it. But showing up is important. Somebody says, I shouldn't be here. Yes, you should. You should be here. God put you here, boy. You know what I'm talking about. So, November's a cool month. I feel like in November, when you're talking about football, things are still murky. There's still a lot of ball left to play. But also, things are starting to crystallize a bit. Somebody asked, what is in the jar? In the jar is a euphemism that a college football coach of mine used to say when he was talking about somebody that was jarred up or ranting or anxious or angry. And I thought it would be a good euphemism to call this show, because we ran a lot and stuff like that. So that's why the show is called what it's called. It's a great question by someone in the live chat, ProFolk22. Okay. Yeah, so we got interesting games in November. Not for the Bengals, of course. Their season's over. The Jets also openly admitting that their season's over, trading away their two best defensive players. Some people say that Sauce has got an attitude problem or whatever. Is that a black thing? Like, I've never seen any news clippings or headlines about Sauce Gardner where I was like, oh, that guy sucks. He's not focused on football. That's what I'm hearing from different media outfits, I guess. There's nothing that you could really, like, I haven't seen anything bad about Sauce Gardner. But let me find some details to the deal here and pull you guys in on what I was seeing. Okay, Colts going all in, of course. Sauce Gardner's headed to the Indianapolis Colts. Two first-round picks it cost Indy to get Sauce Gardner's services. That is an insane asking price. Absolutely nuts asking price that the Colts fulfilled. Now, this also, to me, implies that they're going all in by giving away one of these picks because, I mean, first-round pick's still a first-round pick, but let's say Indy wins it all and they got pick 32. You know, you could get a real guy. I that's probably not the, not my best take, but I'll say like 32. And it could be, look, man, we're probably just going to see the Chiefs win the Super Bowl again this year. Makes me want to die even thinking about it. But if Indy won it, that would be pretty cool. I'd have a little bit of angst. No, I wouldn't. I'd be really happy for him. Just the fact that I used to work there would be like, oh, man, I'm missing out. Fuck. You know what I'm saying? Because you make, dude, when the team's good in sports, when you're selling tickets in the sports business and the team is good, oh, man. I've never been a part of a ticket sales staff where the team was as good as that Indy team is right now. I can't imagine what kind of money people on their sales staff are making right now. I bet it's a lot of fun, man. Two first-round picks. Obviously a massive price for a corner mid-season. They're trying to win now. Chiefs look beatable this year. NFL's as wide open as it can possibly be. AFC, particularly, as wide open as it could possibly be. There's nobody in the AFC South that even particularly stands in the way of Indy to win the division crown this year. I just looked at the chat. Somebody says, yo, drop the shower link, Unc. I want to see it from the back. That's from Senior Squeaky. And he follows up with a question mark. Let me think. Are you talking, what's a shower link? You know? Yeah. No, I think it's, look, I take that chat as a compliment, actually. It's very nice that somebody would enjoy watching me wash myself. You know, that's very nice. I appreciate that from Senior Squeaky. Can't say I have any kind of link to that. You know, I don't know. That can mean a lot of things. You know, you'd have to clarify, and then we'll chat about it. All righty then. Sauce Gardner, right? Chiefs look beatable. Ravens down. I mean, I think every NFL franchise is saying that right now. That's got some motion, right? We're going all in. It's wide open this year. We're going all in. So it's like, who's really all in? I think Indy is. And you got an owner over there, Miss Carly Ursay Gordon. Okay? Very good-looking lady. I used to see her in the halls every day when I was working for the Indianapolis Colts. And she was always so nice and would make eye contact and smile and say hi. And I would always get scared because you're the boss and you're hot. I would get real scared. In the best, most fun way. You know what I mean? I just get real, real nervous. And she's doing a hell of a job, man. She's doing an incredible job down there, picking up the play calls. Even on this show, I'll put myself on the, on the whipping board right now. I'll put myself on there. What came out a couple episodes ago, like a couple month or two ago, beginning of the season, September, so 2 months ago, and I was kind of like, women don't belong in football. But and it was around her, and it was like that was a bad take. Look at the Colts success they're having. You know what I mean? And I think she made great points. She said, if you're going to pay guys big bucks, you got to make sure they're not full of bullshit. And so she jumps on a headset with a – I don't know if she has a mic. I know mic duties with coaches are very hallowed places to be, right? If you're a coach with your mic on, that's a big deal. That's a sign of respect from your peers. As a coach, from what I understand, I haven't gotten to that level of coaching yet, but it's a big long life. You know what I mean? But I do know that if you got mic privileges as a coach, that's a big deal. Everybody respects you, and they want to hear what you have to say. So I don't know, Miss Carly. She could have mic duties if she wanted because she owns the team. She is a product. She's a second generation. A lot of people are calling. Some of these owners in that similar boat, nepo owners, nepotism owners. And it's like, dude, nepotism doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be bad at your job, I don't think. With Carly Ursay, it's like, dude, they are 7-2. They are playing great football. They are arguably the best team in the league. So that's nepotism. That's a good case of nepotism. I'd argue that a bad case of nepotism is right up I-71 in Cincinnati with Katie Blackburn, the daughter of Mike Brown, running the Bengals. It's like everything else in life. It's about the attitude that you uniquely bring to the situation. I think a lot of people are really quick to write someone off. Sometimes, every case is different, but sometimes you see people quick to write someone off because of what they come from on either side. And we forget, and I think people like Carly Ursay are good reminders that it really is case by case. If we're talking about performance in your job and life, it just varies. What do you, you know, I don't know. But they're making a move. I'm really excited to see what Sauce looks like in that Colts uniform. I'm really excited to see how he transitions and whether his play elevates, stays the same, or God forbid he gets a little worse. So he's a third-year corner. I mean, you're talking prime years. Year 3 to year 6, 7, 8. They're going to get his prime years. And they thought 2 first-rounders were worth that. Insane asking price, but might be worth it. Very well could be worth it. Their defense is already good, by the way. Kenny Moore, he's been asked to be the number one corner there in Indy for a long time, and I think Kenny Moore is a great player. But now that he'll be able to step into the second corner role, the sidekick to Sauce, not to diminish Kenny Moore, but let's be real. A CB, a corner two to Sauce Gardner is an incredible place for Kenny Moore to be. And it'll definitely elevate his play as well, if that's even possible. So yes, I think it's completely justified Indy sending 2 first-rounders for the third-year corner, Sauce Gardner, at the University of Cincinnati, by the way, which, again, is right up the road from Indy. What else is going on, man? They dropped the college football rankings, dude, and Ohio State has been in that number one spot all year. Indiana coming in at number two, A&M at number three, Alabama at number four, and Georgia at number five. You know, you can't not put Ohio State first. The top six teams in this college football playoff rankings right now are all SEC, Big Ten. And there's no such thing as a bias. It's just the highest quality programs out there right now. That's it. You got two, three, four out of the six SEC teams in the top six. And then you got the two only quality real, I shouldn't say it, in terms of elite in the Big Ten, you got Ohio State and you got Indiana. In terms of eliteness, okay? Right after that top six, and Ole Miss is at number six, by the way, you've got BYU, who's undefeated. I think one of maybe four or five undefeated teams in college football. One of four undefeated teams in college football, BYU is. Those guys, they got all that extra chi from not being able to have a yank in the dorms without risk of expulsion. Guys can't even drink Diet Cokes or keeping them bad chemicals away from them or any kind of Coke. You know, you can't do the other kind of Coke if you're at BYU either. They're playing good football as a result. They got Texas Tech this weekend, who's number eight in America. So number seven versus number eight, BYU versus Texas Tech. Could arguably be the game of the week in college football. Let's take a look at what Mr. Outline has prepared for me on that game. 11 a.m. on Saturday on Fox. College Game Day will be there in Lubbock. Texas Tech comes out as 10.5-point favorites at home. They're playing their sixth consecutive game. They haven't had a bye week yet. And BYU's coming off a restful, hopefully, bye week. This is kind of what we're talking about in terms of November kind of defining seasons. We're starting to see who the real teams are. We are. But every game is huge here. Now, every game could destroy a college football program season. And this one matters huge. Texas Tech, BYU. BYU's got to run the ball. I think that's pretty obvious, don't y'all? I haven't watched either of these teams. I watched Texas Tech briefly. And I just don't want to just fucking read talking points to you guys, you know, off an outline. I don't know a ton about either of these teams. I just know that one of them's Mormon, and I know that Texas Tech lost to somebody. So they would probably be out of the college football playoff if they lose this one. BYU, they have a couple more games to lose, I would guess. You know what I mean? Who did Texas Tech lose to again? I can't remember, man. Texas Tech football. Who did they lose to? I know Colorado's got West Virginia. They lost to somebody. Arizona State. That's who it was. ASU beat him. Sam Leavitt and Kenny Dillingham over there. He's in the conversation for the LSU head coaching job. And that discussion continues. I have no idea how somebody There are a couple guys out there that do this that I really respect. They only talk about college football on their show. And I see how much the LSU coaching search is being talked about. And I just think to myself, I'm like, you know, it seems kind of tired at this point. You know, politics are out of it. A lot of people are saying Marcus Freeman is the number one candidate for the LSU coaching job. I'm like, dude, you talk about bad fit. He's done a fine job with that Notre Dame program, but it's just different in Baton Rouge than South Bend, Indiana, dude. It's just different. And my intuition tells me that a guy like Marcus Freeman does not work at LSU. So I guess LSU's got a new AD now. They've also got a new university president now. New president, his name is Wade Roos. I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. And then AD Verge Fastberry, now permanent. Been there since colors were decided. So he's an old bird. Verge Fast. What the hell? LSU. They had to have misspelled that. Verge Osberry, an LSU administrator. He's now the AD. Sounds like he's an old bird. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think the political theater from last week with the governor, I really enjoyed Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry. I enjoyed listening to him speak. I think there's a bigger portion, there's a bigger ideological macro around what Jeff Landry said last week and how he did it that's important for the sake of college football. Now, there is a negative side to that. I think guys that are looking at coming to LSU to be the head coach saw that political theater last week as a turnoff. And I don't blame them for that. That's what's being said in the media and people on the inside, is that the political theater in Louisiana last week was not a good look for the head on the side of the head coaching candidates. There's not going to be, I don't think, I'd be shocked if LSU hired their guy before the season. Maybe they'll hire him right around bowl time, right around load management time in college football. You know, the time where everybody knows what bowl they're going to. That time of year is obviously a little different now that the playoffs expanded like it has to 12 teams. But you know what I'm talking about. Guys that have a Liberty Bowl coming up that are going to be pros say, yeah, I'm good on that. I've always hated that, by the way. But sometimes, in very rare cases, it's justified. You know, a future number one pick, a guy everybody, it's been so good, everybody knows he's coming out. You know, they'll be like, Cheez-It Bowl, I'm good there. You know, maybe LSU picks their head coach around that time. It would surely be a head coach that would probably still be in the playoff mix. So that muddies the water too. Maybe a surprise exit or two in the semifinals or something like that, and then they hire the guy right after the team loses or whatever. Those transitions for coaches was always very interesting to me, because I never experienced that as a college player. In fact, my head coach from 10 years ago is still the head coach at Samford now. So I never experienced a head coach leaving, what they say to the team, when they say it. I'm sure sometimes the media gets their hands on it before the coach can call a meeting, and they got to put out fires on that front. But somebody's head coach that is going to get poached by LSU. Somebody's. Vandy's Clark Lea is in the discussion for every job. And there's a lot of names that are in the discussion for every job. I don't know why people even utter Lane Kiffin's name around this LSU job. It's not happening. It's not. You can clip this and burn me at the stake if I'm wrong. Lane Kiffin's not going to LSU. It's not happening. He's an Oxford guy. And if anything, if he left, he would be a Tuscaloosa guy. He would go to Bama. But that job's not coming open anytime soon that we know of. But I just, like, I see some of these college football shows spending so much time talking about Lane Kiffin to LSU. But my intuition, like, that's kind of a ridiculous credibility grab on a football show is to say my intuition tells me. But it's like, dude, I follow Lane Kiffin on Twitter. I've been to Oxford numerous times. I get it. He's happy there. He's built something there. There's real honor and pride that comes from knowing that he built that program to what it is. They're number six in the playoff rankings right now. What can't he do at Ole Miss that he could do at LSU? You know? But then with Marcus Freeman, I don't see him being even close to a fit for LSU. I think the best fit for the LSU Tigers would be one of two guys. Coach Joe Brady, who was the mind behind that 2019 offense, probably the greatest college football team ever. Joe Brady, the current offensive coordinator for the Bills. Or Coach O. Coach O. The main question with Coach O would be, can he get it done the way the game has changed since even when he was leaving LSU? Things are way different 4 years ago. I say yes. You know why? Because Coach O is a physical team's eye formation, couple inches in a cloud of dust type of coach. He's a charismatic recruiter also, but let's stay on here. Coach O was not a disciple of the type of offense they ran with that great team in 2019. It was Joe Brady. Joe Brady had that modern offensive mind, and he was the main reason why that offense hummed like it did. Now, what does that say about Coach O? It says that Coach O knew that he needed to modernize that offense with those players, and he wasn't going to be the guy to do it. He needed to hire somebody that had the mind for that. He needed to delegate that responsibility. Coach O CEO'd his way to a national title in 2019. And so if I think CEOing, for better or for worse, is part of the duty of being a college coach. We're seeing it not work at Colorado because Coach Prime's a great CEO. That's University of Prime. That's not University of Colorado anymore. That's the University of Prime. But Colorado is struggling terribly right now. I don't know what spurred this press cycle about Colorado's implosion, but people are eating it up. And obviously Coach Prime's polarizing. His son's Shadur is polarizing. You know, and it's like, I think the problem with Colorado is that they're adjusting to the new era of college football too much. You know, like I'll give you an example. I was talking with a coach, one of my other Pop Warner coaches last night. And we were talking about a team that we have coming up. It's a California team. And we're talking about their film. And he was telling me, like, dude, these kids, they're just like, they get up after a big hit and they're, you know, flexing and shoving each other around and celebrating. It kind of looked like the U in the 80s. He was like, I think our kids need more of that. And so the rest of the practice, I was like, let's get some juice. Let's get some fucking juice here on defense, boys. Hey, fuck not celebrating. You better get up and pop him in the helmet one time if he hits somebody. You know, stuff like that. And at the end of practice, one of my corners sniffed out a bubble screen and went and blew it up. And all the kids, like, are running to him and they're, like, dogpiling them and all this stuff. And we still had another play to play. And so I got them all up. I'm like, all right, run to the line. And after practice, I told them, I was like, look, I want this. I want that from y'all. I want y'all to be dogs. But y'all kind of overdid that. That's Colorado responding to the new college football. They've overdone it, I think. I think they've gone too far with the severity in which they've tried to adjust to the times. You know, they got like they do like mercenary style recruiting or something. That's something I read. It's like you got this is what my outline says Colorado's recruiting strategy is. This is from other shows, other media outlets. This is Colorado's recruiting strategy. 38 mercenaries with no foundation. I don't know what a mercenary would be in this context, but that's what other media outfits are saying. They got 38 mercenaries out there. And I know for a fact that Colorado only hits the portal. They don't recruit high schoolers. And I think you have to, at some point, consider a hybrid approach where you're getting fresh young kids out of high school ready to play. And then all the other kids that you think might have the chance to play down the line, let them go to JUCO, let them develop. You know, and then go find them when they're ready. But it seems like Colorado's coaching staff hasn't really emphasized development. There's so much roster turnover that I feel like a lot of coaches don't even that like coaches probably with this roster, with the transfer portal and how it's affecting roster turnover year in and year out. There's probably a lot of coaches out there that don't feel like it's worthwhile to pour into kids anymore because you're just going to leave me. Why would I develop you? I don't know if I agree with that sentiment, but I would definitely guess that it's widespread. You know, why would I pour into this kid? He's just going to leave. So there's not really... I wouldn't say that this is not just with Colorado. This is with a lot of college programs that might be struggling. But when you look at the successful programs, how do those guys, you know, make sure that they're doing what they're doing what they're supposed to do? You probably got to be really innovative. I mean, I know that. I probably sound like Captain Obvious. But you probably got to be really innovative and really intuitive as a college football coach these days with how you're getting kids amped up, with how you're recruiting, with your messaging day to day. being a coach, this is what being a successful, and I know this from experience, this is what being a successful college coach and probably also professional coach constitutes. You guys ready? I think this is the most important day-to-day job of a college coach or a professional coach, and it's creating a narrative in the building. And obviously, a narrative that benefits the team, a narrative that is outside of the media's narrative. You know, you always have in football programs, you always have like special sayings for each season. You got like you put it on T-shirts sometimes, like stuff like that. Coaches have got to be the most important part of being a coach, at least to me in college, is being able to create that narrative for the team each week. Even if it's, you know, this guy said they use the media a lot for their narrative, actually. Nick Saban was incredible at that, calling media takes rat poison, you know, taking a clip from my show and throwing it up on the projector in a team meeting and be like, this is what people have to say about our team. You guys feel like this is good stuff right here? No. All right. Well, go out and prove it in practice, you know, or something like that. You guys with me? I got that from John Gruden. You guys with me? And I use it on my kids, and it's great. Because every time I hit a coaching point, I'm just like, hey, throttle your feet down, lead with the shoulder, face mask up, into his chest, through him. You got me? It's just a good ending to that sentence so that they retain it for some reason, at least for that age. It's just very concise. I don't know. I like saying, you got me? Are you guys with me? Damn, dude. I just saw the chat where somebody said, all right, Unc, Rams Super Bowl champ. How does he know I'm a Bengals fan and that hurts me? What else we got in the chat? A lot of big moves at the trade deadline. Yes, this is my dog. Hello, dog. So what else? You know, that, like I said, high roster turnover with a school like Colorado. So it's probably impossible to build a culture. And what does culture really mean? Like, does a culture become more robust when people are around for years and you have leaders that are enforcing the expectations and the standards of the program? Absolutely. But there's some coaches like Kirk Cignetti, like Ryan Day, like Lane Kiffin, Kirby, that are doing it year in and year out. They've adjusted to the new landscape, and they've also not overdone it. Because a lot of those coaches were around before all of this. So those types of coaches, the ones that are having success in college football, are the coaches that do not attach themselves to old ways. They understand what matters, what the priorities are, out of all of the old ways that they have conducted themselves before college football was different. And so they implement those, I'm sure. But then they're also receptive and curious enough to try out new ideas. Folks like Lane Kiffin's great at that. I truly believe that's the main ingredient for Lane Kiffin's success, is being open and receptive and curious about new ideas on how to run a program in this new age of college football. So Colorado, they got a tough game this weekend. They're at West Virginia in Morgantown, and it's going to be raining hard. It's a 10 a.m. game. And the Mountaineers are run by legendary Rich Rodriguez, who's definitely going to find a way to try and pick Colorado apart. So this is a big, big, important game. Again, you got these big, important games in November. In this case, it's not really a playoff discussion. It's nothing more than is this Colorado program what they've said they've been? You know, you got this hater narrative, right? If they collapse, if Colorado loses this weekend at West Virginia, a tough, rainy game against Rich Rodriguez, it's going to validate every hater who said this wouldn't work. And there are a lot of Colorado haters. There are a lot of Shedeur Sanders, Deion Sanders haters. I posted a clip, and I'll play devil's advocate for a minute. I posted a clip about Shedeur Sanders a couple months ago, and I wasn't particularly kind in my delivery, and I had so many people comment on the video and tell me that I was racist and that my take didn't matter because I was white. And everybody just brings race into it. It's ridiculous to me. The real racists are the people that are commenting. If you want to know the truth, I love being called a honky or a pink toe peckerwood. I say that unironically. I love it. It's fun. But when you bring race into something, any discussion, when the unsolicited party wasn't even talking about race, who's really thinking about that? It's not the unsolicited guy. So that's my, you know, that always comes to mind when I talk about Colorado, because it's like every time I say something bad about Shedeur, it's racism. You know, it's just ridiculous. So it's a big game for this Colorado program. I'm beating a dead horse, I feel like. But can they prove that they really belong in these discussions that they've been in for the last couple of years? I think this game might be a culmination of that if they lose. And the worst part about it for Colorado is if they win, not many people will talk about it probably. It's the way it goes, man. It's colder than the dope game out here, man. There's a lot more on this, but golly, you know, I feel like I talked about that for a hot minute. We talked about a Colts trade. That's going to be, I'll be interested to see if Sauce plays this weekend. I bet he will. Looks like, there's a Week 10 preview in here. We'll probably save that for later in the week. Yeah, I don't feel like blowing that load this early in the week. I just don't, man. Okay. Here's a take. Lane Kiffin is going to jerk LSU around for leverage at Ole Miss. I wouldn't blame Lane for doing that. It's just like any other job opportunity. If you're working in solar sales and you have another solar sales company approach you and say, we'll pay you $150,000 and you're making $100,000 at your current one, why would you not take that offer to your current boss and say, hey, I'm going to give you guys opportunity to match this? I think that's just good negotiation, good business. I don't think that's a hot take at all. Lane Kiffin jerk LSU around for leverage at Ole Miss. I would do that. Try to get paid more. You know what I mean? That's just negotiation, biz. Another hot take says Colorado's collapse proves Prime can't actually coach. He's a CEO. This is not necessarily my take. I'm just going over hot takes here. He's a CEO / recruiter, but not a real coach. Can't develop, can't game plan, can't adjust. When talent is equal, they get exposed. I think it's a little early to say that.
Because how many years has he had at Colorado? Is this his third?
Not sure. Is he still in? I mean, I think he would leave if he wasn't still in coaching mentally, physically, spiritually. We know Coach Prime's had his health problems. I don't think Coach Prime's the type of guy to show up to a job that he doesn't feel like showing up to. But who knows? We got somebody in the chat. Jets aren't giving up on the season. They traded away two marketable players. That's true. Jets got a lot of draft picks and players in return. Remember, Jets won when Gardner couldn't play in the last game. Yeah, against my Bengals. Thanks for salting the wound, brother. Appreciate you popping in, though, Harlan Abraham. It's the most inexcusable game. Don't get me started on this Bengals team again, man. I kind of want you to get me started. You see the dog in the picture? You guys on YouTube probably can't see him, but you can see him on the horizontal. Why don't you pop up here? Why don't you put your legs up on the arm here? Yeah, you know, the Bengals are ass trash dog water, and they're my favorite team in all of sports, and they piss me off. And they lose to the Jets without Sauce Gardner. But dude, the Bengals offense has been tearing people apart. Tearing people apart. Even though the Jets got the win against the Bengals and Sauce Gardner was out, the Bengals did hang 38 on them. Now the Jets hung 39 on us. First team to score 38 or more in two consecutive games since 1966. It's disgusting. I always make stuff about the Bengals. If you're new to this show, a lot of times I'm going to weave any football topic back into the Cincinnati Bengals. Here's a hot take. Speaking of the Jets, Sauce Gardner trade. This is not my take. This is my AI outline that I prepare for every show. We kind of stick to it loosely, but it gave me some hot takes for today's show, and this is one of them. Sauce Gardner trade will be disaster for the Colts. Can't fix character / attitude with New Jersey. See, two firsts is an insane price. Colts will regret this in 2 years. That's a lot of subjective statements there. Yeah, I know that people knock Sauce because he focuses on commercials and media stuff more than the average player. And then also, it seems like he's been hurt a lot. Man, football's violent. Football, to play player's advocate for a second, football's violent. It's really hard on your body. But to play devil's advocate, how many of these guys are making sure they eat clean every meal, like Derrick Henry? Probably not a lot of them. How many guys get in a cold plunge every day? Probably not a lot of them. And you could go down the list. There's a lot of things that, you know, I'm not a pro athlete, but I take my body and my health very, very seriously. And there's a lot of things I do throughout the course of a day to make sure that my health is the best that it can possibly be. And there's even more things that I would do every day if I had a bit more walking around money to buy a big-ass red light panel or to buy a hyperbaric chamber or PEMF. There's tons of things. A sauna at my house. There's tons of things more that I would do with my health if I had the money than an NFL guy had. And sometimes people just don't have access to the right information, the right knowledge. But again, if your occupation, if the thing that makes you money is the well-being and performance of your meat suit, then you should be surrounding yourself with people that have access to the information you need to keep your meat suit tip-top magoo. You know, I'm not trying to give a goddamn disposition on what it takes to be a pro football player. I've never been one, never will be one. But I do feel like I understand how to keep yourself from getting hurt for the most part, how to keep your body in tip-top optimal mental, physical, spiritual condition. And so I just wonder, like, how many guys are meditating on a daily basis in the NFL? How many guys are writing down their thoughts for a page or two a day? I would guess not all of them. So with the injuries, I think, and this has been a big, big narrative with the NFL season this year, is injuries. I think with as many injuries as we've had, we got to start looking at some different daily routines, methodologies to maybe require for professional athletes. You know, we're not trying to get communist here. But I'm biased, but if you mandated my daily routine, let's just make it about me for a second. If you mandated my daily routine for every NFL player, I'd be willing to bet a pretty penny that less guys would be getting hurt. Cold plunge, sauna, red light, breath work, meditation, zone two cardio. And then when you get money involved, there's a bunch of other things like I mentioned earlier. You know, hyperbaric, PEMF, oxygen machines, sauna at home, etc. So, I don't know. I've never been a pro athlete. But I've gotten to be able to copy the routines of some. And, you know, I haven't gotten hurt lately. So, that's pretty cool. But anyways, we're at about 58 minutes. I'm going to head to jiu-jitsu here in about 40 to 50 minutes. Take a second to relax, wind down, unpack a good work day, maybe get some more work done. But we're at about an hour here, so I'm going to let you guys go. If you're new here, appreciate you watching. Make sure you like the video and subscribe to the channel. I don't think YouTube's algorithm would have brought you here if you didn't like football. And if you don't like football, or if you like football, if you don't like football, stay the hell away. If you like football, you're going to love our channel. So subscribe. Helps us out a lot. I want to be able to hire full-time people to help us bring the best version of this show that we can bring to you. And in order to do that, you got to subscribe. Every single subscription counts, and I really appreciate anybody that chooses to do that. You are immediately family to me, and you will have gotten in on the ground floor of what will be one of the biggest podcasts in the world. Football or not football. Okay? So you can also get this podcast on any audio platform, big or small. That's updated daily. And it's great for making your girlfriend learn about football in the car on the way to what you told her was a date. So there's that. We also got plenty of other stuff on the channel. Madden streams, clips from other shows that I'm on, clips from this show. The list goes on and on and on. Thank you for the sub, Harlan. Really appreciate it. So yeah, that's all we got today, boys and girls. But we'll be back tomorrow. I know the time changed. I'm in Arizona, so my time does not change. So it's 4:24 here right now. So I think it's 6:24 Eastern. So we'll probably be going live 5-ish Eastern from here on, just to kind of recalibrate that time difference. Just get clear on that so you guys don't miss it. You can also get replays of the show on this channel. And if you want, you can watch it on Twitch. You can watch it on Kick as well. I'm going to let you guys go now, but really appreciate everybody. And we'll be back tomorrow. How's that sound?